I think it goes without saying that this morning we have to say something about the events of the week. I think we're very privileged to live in a country where the event of the week is the passing of a great gadol. And I think that it's amazing that the entire news was about one thing, a rabbi dying. And those that want to eulogize Israel and talk about how secular Israel is, I think this week would be a contra to the other side. I would like to say three things about Rav Ovadia Yosef, Zichrono Livracha, that I believe anyone looking from the outside, namely the religious Zionist community, the modern Orthodox community, people that didn't necessarily see him as their rabbi, I believe have to at least pay homage to three aspects of his life that I believe have to be stated. I'm not going to say they were overlooked, but I'm going to say that they weren't as emphasized on Facebook, Twitter, and other eulogies that are written about him and will be written about him. People are talking about his amazing memory. People are talking about his endless svarim. And every one of those things are important and vital. But this morning, in our very short time, allow me to talk about three things that I didn't see as emphasized. Number one, within our series of being normal, which is what we're doing this morning, I believe that Rav Ovadia Yosef came from the people and never left the people. I want to say that again. He came from the people and never left the people. And allow me to explain what I mean. First of all, he didn't come from a rabbinic family. His father was a grocer. He had absolutely no yichus. He married a woman that had no yichus. There was absolutely nothing about him when he was born that would have told you this man would be a gadol, would be a Talmid Chacham, would make a revolution. In other words, they can't write an art school book about him so easily, because they can't say that his father was a great rabbi and his grandfather was a great rabbi and he became a great rabbi. They're going to have to say he came from nothing and he built himself up individually. He came from the people. He grew up, born in Iraq, grew up on the streets of Yerushalayim, and that's where he came from. And I want to say that's where he never left. And here I want to say something very important about him. Number one, the halacha is that when you nominate a chazan on a fast day for a drought, you can't nominate someone that's detached from the people, but it has to be someone that's connected to the people. If you remember the hinini he'ani mimaz that the chazan customarily says in Ashkenazic communities before Musaf on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you see that one of the lines there is urav bedat im abriyot, that his mind is not detached from the people, but with the people. And therefore the halacha is in Meseches Tainis, Daf Tzayin, the chazan for a fast day must be someone that A, is married, B, has kids, C, is missing something. He can't be too rich, because then he doesn't feel the hardships of the people that he's representing. He has to be someone that identifies with, I would say, 80% of the people he's representing. Not the very rich, not the very poor, but 80% of the people he is representing. And that, I believe, was Rav Ovadia Yosef. He came from nothing. He went up the ladder to become the chief rabbi of Israel eventually, then made the amazing revolution of Shas and the Sephardic world, but he never left the people. And I'll give you my very clear proof of what I mean. Motze Shabbos, he used to give a lecture that was satellited throughout Israel before iPhones and whatnot. Tell me something. How many gdolim do you know that can give a lecture to the masses? How many? Great, Talmidei Chachamim that can talk to the simple folk on the street that, excuse me for saying so, didn't open up a sefer all week, or maybe since they got out of yeshiva. Motzei Shabbos, instead of going here there, they listened to his lecture. Did you ever listen to those lectures? I'm not talking about the fun parts of it that they quoted in the news. I'm talking about the content. Did you ever listen? They're on YouTube. You can listen very easily. They are like taking the most sophisticated Torah concepts and putting it into a Dr. Seuss book. The man was able to relate to the people because he never left the people. He was able to give stories. He was able to go ahead and joke a little bit and curse a little bit. Not terrible curses, but the people identified, said, this is one of us. Yes, he wore the garb of the chief rabbi, but his language was so simple, like a Dr. Seuss book. He was able to teach Torah to the masses. So first and foremost, I think we have to mourn a great gadol that never left the people. And if you ask me what means to be normal, first and foremost it means you live with the people. Not in an Eiffel Tower where you teach the elite, and not underground where you teach the poor. You have to be able to teach the masses. And that's what he was able to do. And here I would like to explain why I was never offended by his exciting parts of his lectures, his cursing, this guy should drop dead. You have to understand, he was with the people. The language he used was the language he learned on the streets when he was a kid, and that's what stayed with him to his dying day. You could say it was good or bad, but there's no question that one good thing definitely came out of it. He was able to relate to everyone. And that's why you saw that an amazing sight happened this Monday night. What's the amazing thing that happened? There was a bracha we could have made that I'm sure you didn't make. Which bracha? When you have 600,000 people, what bracha do you make? Baruch ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Chacham HaRazim. Blessed be you God, King of the Universe, who is one that gives different minds to different people. And the Gemara says, because no two minds think alike. Jews from various quakes and wakes of life, over 600,000 for sure, they estimated it much higher, came to pay their final respects to Rav Ovadia Yosef. That is an amazing sight. I don't believe we were zocha to in a very long time. You can make a bracha. But that just shows how he never left the people. Because if he would have been a gadol just for the elite, the Talmidei Chachamim would have come to the funeral. If he would have taught yeshiva students, the yeshiva students would have come to the funeral. You saw who came to the funeral. From the simple poel to the biggest Talmud Chacham. Yes.
I thought the bracha you were supposed to say when you see all the, those many Jews was, blessed are you God, Lord of the Universe, revealer of secrets or something.
I don't know what Chacham HaRazim means, revealer of secrets, but okay. Translation from Hebrew into English. Your translation could be as good as mine. Number two, and this is another aspect that I don't believe any of us can get to. I know we want to be normal, and I would love to do this, but I'm not so sure this aspect was normal. This is really a tzaddik. He had a total emotional solidarity with the people he met. And I mean totally emotional solidarity. They say about a Hasidic Rebbe, and every Hasidic group will tell you about his Rebbe, that he listened to someone, and when he came out of the room, he was sweating. They said, why were you sweating? He said, I had to get into his shoes. So I had to take off my clothes, put on his clothes and his shoes, and understand what he's going through. Then I had to get dressed into my clothes. So I'm sweating, because I had to go back and forth, changing clothing. Rav Ovadia Yosef, whoever met him, and I saw this as an eyewitness, he emotionally had total solidarity with the person in front of him. If an aguna, one whose husband is missing, came to him, and this is a very grave halachic shaila, the man would start crying with her. I don't know if you've ever seen it. The man would start crying with her. I once met Rav Ovadia Yosef, I mean personally, in the same room. A bunch of rabbis visiting from abroad. We went in, and this man was there. I could feel he totally identifies with us. Know what he told us? First of all, he told us the first aspect. When you give drushes, give a lot of stories. Halacha is important, but you have to give a lot of stories. You know what it meant for me? I'm saying this in parentheses. The man who wrote over 40 books on halacha is saying halacha is important, but give more stories than halacha. He had totally identified with where we were coming from. Someone told him we come from far-fledged communities. You could feel in the room the man was excited. He was there saying, you have such a hard thing, you have to give a lot of stories, and you have to do, and he was excited, he was jumping out of his chair. When he gave drushes to, you saw it. And when a woman came to him with a terrible problem, he cried with her. This was the man that totally identified with the person in front of him. He cried with them, he laughed at them. There's a famous story going around now, the internet, that when he was matir, one of the agunas of the Yom Kippur War, he came to the heter around 11:30 at night, 12 o'clock at night. And next morning he was going to tell the basin, we can matir this woman, a very hard case. So he said, let's call her. But it's 12 o'clock at night, you'll find out in the morning. But she's staying up all night. This woman's probably staying up all night thinking, what are they going to say tomorrow morning? Can I get remarried or can't I? Why should we leave her in suspense? Let's tell her right now. And they called her up at 12 o'clock at night. Only a person with total emotional solidarity can do that. Rav Benny Lau, who wrote his doctorate in Rav Ovadia Yosef, tells a story about an aguna that came and they thanked Rav Ovadia Yosef, and when they left the room, his hand was totally full of tears. And he said the following words, quoting a medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, Ra'iti et dim'at ha'ashukim. I saw the crying of those that are downtrodden, of those that are in need. Elu ha'mamzerim. These are mamzerim. Do you know what it means to be a mamzer? A mamzer means that a woman lost her husband, doesn't know where he is, she never got a get, and he's presumed to be dead, and she gets every heter in the world to get remarried, and one day she's walking the streets of Yerushalayim, and guess who she bumps into? Her husband. What do we call all the kids from her second marriage? If they're boys, what are they called? We know their names. Alex, what are their names? Mamzer, mamzer, and mamzer. And if they're girls, what do we call them? Mamzeret. That's a terrible situation. What are they at fault for? So Rabbi Avadia Yosef had this question. And he dealt with it. He dealt with it and he found a way. Again, I don't know the details of the story, but I'm assuming he invalidated the first marriage. So the second marriage was totally fine. And he said, Mi ashakad le'ela, the Medrash says. Who made them miserable? Who made them downtrodden? Sanhedrin shedanu otam bedin Torah. The Sanhedrin that paskin the Shiloh that they were mamzerim. Ve'en lahem menachem, and they have no one to comfort her, says ki'ilu God, ani anachamim. I'll comfort them. This is what he felt when a mamzer came to him. He didn't say, ah, Shiloh, okay, ah, terrible, okay, let's look in the books. He totally identified with the person. You know what it means? Every story of the Yom Kippur War and the Yom Kippur War was a tragedy that we haven't yet got out of, and yet a great victory at the same time. It's an amazing war in our history. Now it's 40 years to the Yom Kippur War. A lot of people are talking about it, so it's in the news, and you see both aspects. It was an amazing victory because we came from Amish nothing, and yet we could have been destroyed. So you know that over 2,000 soldiers were killed, and many of them were married, and we didn't know where they were. He mocked you every last aguna. Do you know what it meant? He went through every single case. The man ultimately totally identified with the person in front of him. Totally. Now you can understand also why he got so excited sometimes and he said things, because he totally identified. There wasn't, I hear you. Okay. All right. Well, look. No, he totally put himself in the shoes of the person in front of him. And now you can understand why this man sometimes said things that were not comfortable, because he was mamish talking from her perspective, not his perspective. He was talking as a rabbi. He would have said things that were formulated. He would have said things that were organized. He was talking from the perspective of the person in front of him. So the first aspect I said is he came from the people, he never left the people. Now you can understand why the masses can understand him, why he sometimes, I would say, spiced up his drushes with fun stuff that the news went crazy on. And I didn't take it to heart because I knew what he was doing. I never did. Even when he called me an amalek, I didn't take it to heart. And if you recall, around this table, I said he made a mistake. He should apologize. Don't make a big deal out of it. Because I knew where he was coming from. I read two biographies on him, and I understood. And the second aspect, of course, is that he was totally emotionally identified with the person in front of him. And the third and last aspect I wanted to say about him is that he was totally original, or to be more precise, he had the strength of his convictions. Now, I don't know if any of us can get to that level. I think it's important. I think that part of being normal is sometimes not to be swayed by what's happening around you, but to go with your derech, and yet be set. Go ahead and have the strength of our convictions like he did. But I want to explain what I mean, strength of his convictions. This man, from a very early age, decided he's going to be a gadol. And he wrote this at a very early age. And that's what he did. This man, from a very early age, decided on a certain derech in Psak Halacha that not all of the Sephardic world is happy about. And that is that we have to paskin like the Shulchan Aruch, or what he called the Beis Yosef, because if you know the Beis Yosef, that's Rav Ovadia's derech. To quote endless sources and to come to a conclusion. Right? The Shulchan Aruch is a one-liner. So he said, I don't care if the Sephardic minug of women throughout the generations has been that when they take a lulav to their hands, they make a bracha, by Gashkenazim. We paskin like the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, no, it's no. He paskin that a woman, Sephardic, cannot say Birkas Kriyat Shema in the morning. Why? Brachot Levatola. They're not chayiv in davening, they're not chayiv in Kriyat Shema, it's open Gemara, they're not chayiv in the brachas, brachas Levatola. He had the strength of his convictions and you could not sway him in halacha. In Ashkafa, it's a different story, I believe. But in Halacha, this man had a gestalt. If he decided mutter, it was mutter. If he decided this is the way to go, this is the way to go. And he can care less what you thought. Now, not any one of us can do that. We sometimes have to see what other people say. I think part of life is also to be sensitive to the fact that you're not perfect. And that, Eino dan yechidi elahu, as the Mishnah says in Maseches Avos. Only God can judge alone. But you have to respect a man that had the strength of his convictions. He went his way, and nothing could sway him. If you look in his tshuvas, which are very hard to read, if you ever opened up his books, he quotes endless sources for every point of view. But if you take away the sources, you know, you got to look at it on a computer, put it on a Word file, just take away the sources and see what he says. He was a very original thinker in halacha. He was. He has lomdus in there. He came to a point of view. The world can go to hell, excuse my expression. But Rav Soloveitchik used that expression. I heard it on tape, so I'm allowed to use it too. He went with the strength of his convictions. And allow me to give you one example that I think many of you use. And you don't even know that it came from him. How do you warm up your kugel on Shabbos morning? New Alex, your wife has to...
A blech!
Okay, so what do? You take your plata. You have a plata or a blech? A blech is a cover for an open fire, and a plata is a plata. New, what do you use? A hot plate. You use a hot plate? Yeah, hot plate. What do? Shabbos morning, you wake up. Where's the kugel? In the freezer, in the refrigerator. Where do you put it?
On the plata.
On the plata. Do you know how, according to many poskim, what you just did is usher? There's a whole sugya called shehiya, which talks about warming up food on Shabbos morning. And some say you can't do that. You have to leave it from Friday night. You can't put a cold dish, even if it's dry, on the plata on Shabbos morning.
Nice.
You have to put it on top of a pot that's already there, like on top of your chillin part. Some say the chillin part has to be full of food. There's a more mekel shita in the Shulchan Aruch. Seems like a steer in Shulchan Aruch, that it could be an empty pot. But you can't just put it on the plata the way we do. Absolutely not. Some say, the Ramah has a kula, the name of Yerushalmi, the Ran quotes, that you put it on Friday night, candle lighting time, you leave it on until it gets dark, you take it off, you could return it Shabbos morning from the refrigerator. But you can't just Shabbos morning, out of the fridge, put your kugel on the plata.
We don't do that.
No, we don't do that. Why? Who allows... I personally have a different custom in my house, how I warm up. Personally, again, I go with the Ramah Shita, in the name of the Ran, the Yerushalmi, but... I want to tell you, till Friday night we put all the food on the plata, then we take it off, and Shabbos morning we return it if it's dry. But that's my minhag. Many Jews, if not the majority of Jews, shuls, Jews at home, what do? Shabbos morning, out of the refrigerator, onto the plata, as long as it's dry. Who said that?
You say onto the plata, you don't mean right on the plata, you mean on something on the plata.
No, right on the plata. No, many do it. What are you talking about?
One has to put a layer of tinfoil up and some...
Layer of tinfoil is nothing. Layer tin foil from here to tomorrow. It's not a gderare kanit. It's not considered an empty pot. People that put directly on the pot, they have a kiddush in shul, they come into shul 8 o'clock, they put the kugel on for the 10 o'clock. Who are they, Samecha? From Rabbi Avadya Yosef. You know what his shita was? He said, blech aside, a plata is a new invention because there is no way that the suspicions and the gzerot of Chazal apply to it. Very innovative. What were the suspicions of Chazal? God said you can warm up food on Shabbos if it's dry. Finished. So what did Chazal come and say? The sages came and say, Listen to me. First of all, Shema Yechateh B'Gechalim. Once upon a time there was a lot of coals. You want to make the food hotter, quicker. What were you going to do? You're going to make the coals. You're going to move them around a little bit. If you move them around a little bit, what you're going to do is both Mavir and Mechabe. You're going to light a fire and extinguish a fire. That's what happens when you roll coals around. And the second chashash they had was bechse kemevasha. It looks like cooking. Says Rav Avadya, a plata, a hot plate, has none of those. First of all, it has no gauge. So what are you going to do? Put the fire up or down? It's impossible. Second of all, there's no coals. Third of all, it doesn't look like cooking. Because when do we take out our plata? Friday afternoon. Where is it all week? In the cupboard. Why? We don't cook on a plata. Many Jews don't know. This is Rav Avadya's innovative shita that became so mainstream because he had the strength of his convictions. The Ashkenazi world went ballistic against him. To this day, many don't follow him on this, but the majority of Jews do, and I've been around the world and I've seen it. It's all because of Rav Avadya. He had a gestalt, he went with it. And this is amazing because ultimately, He can care less in halacha. Again, in halacha, about what others said. So to sum up, first of all, he was from the people and never left the people. That was the language he used. That's where he came from. And ultimately, many of the statements he made can be understood this way. Just one, and excuse me for bringing it up again. You know my opinion about going to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. You know what he said about Uman? He didn't say Eretz Yisrael was great from quote sources. He didn't say Rosh Hashanah should be spent. But you know what he said when they asked him about Uman? The first reaction he had, this is on tape and I heard it. I quote, who's going to watch the kids when they make havoc in shul? Shul is long in Rosh Hashanah. Who's going to watch the kids? What, the mother's going to watch her alone? That was his first reaction. This is only a man from the people that could say that. A great gadol, who remains a gadol and forgets where he comes from, would say, you know, Eretz Yisrael was very important. Who's going to watch the kids? That's what he said. That was his first reaction. Second reaction, you should sit at a yontif table with all the kids around and do the simanim together. Meaning a normal family has a father and a mother. Then, believe me, you can quote all the sources in the world. But that just shows you, from the people, and never left the people. That's how I explained his language, his spicy cursing, and many other things. Number two, he totally emotionally showed solidarity with the people in front of him. And number three is, of course, the strength of his convictions. This is the man that we lost this week. And I think we have to ask ourselves seriously, so what of these aspects do we want to implement in our life? Halavai, I should feel total solidarity with the person in front of me. I should get to that level. I think we should aspire to it. Strength of my convictions, I'm not on a level to say that everything I say is perfect. I think we have to go with our convictions, but sometimes we do look to the right and the left and see how do they apply to the world. But when it comes to the first aspect, being normal means you live with the people. 100% you live with the people. If your Torah is only understood by the elite, there's something wrong. It's supposed to be for everyone. Yes, Bruce.
For Ashkenazi Jews who know the Hobar of Rav Ovadia regarding the plot as a case in point, can we just do that? Can we say, oh?
Many do. I'm saying, right or wrong, many do. You could say yes, you could say no, but many, many, many do. That is the reality. Many do. And they're Somech on Rav Ovadia. They're Somech on Rav Ovadia. Okay, Yehi Zichro Baruch.